Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Israeli warplanes last night launched what appeared to be the heaviest airstrikes yet on Gaza City, shortly after Hamas militants fired a barrage of rockets at southern Israel. The latest unrest has repeatedly escalated over the past week, marking the worst fighting in the territory since the devastating war between Israel and Hamas in 2014. To take a closer look at all of this, I'm joined on the line by BBC World Affairs editor John Simpson. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. There was a theory towards the end of last week that the Eid holiday might provide some respite, but the fighting just seems to have become more intense over the last number of days.
Well, there's a pattern to these things. You know, this is scarcely the first example of this that we've had, and you can see a clear kind of graph that goes through them. Israel attacks Gaza City in particular in response to Hamas rockets. And the way in which the thing goes, the international community starts to get upset by the loss of life and the appalling conditions that are exerted on civilians. And eventually, they force a ceasefire. And we're kind of, I think, two-thirds of the way through this at the moment. Israel actually ramping up its attacks, but in the knowledge that quite soon the Americans, who are really at the moment their only strong supporters internationally, will say to them, look, you can't keep on doing this. You've got to stop. And then there'll be some form of ceasefire negotiations. It's a depressing pattern.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, we're not at the end of it yet. I see the BBC's diplomatic correspondent, Paul Adams, saying that Hamas has been offering some kind of ceasefire for several days. Israel, though, wants to keep going until it's finally brought to a close. And as you say, this follows this pattern where Israel rebuffs any attempt to reach a ceasefire point because it needs to inflict as much damage as it feels it needs to in order to reach a point where this ceasefire will be successful.
That's exactly the purpose of it. I mean, Israel says its purpose is to destroy Hamas as much as it can. Hamas says that 20 of its fighters, including some one or two quite senior people, have been killed. And the Israelis say that it's far worse than that. And I dare say it is. The trouble is that you've got Gaza City, which is packed out with around 600,000 people. It's the third most densely populated city on Earth. And if you use high explosives, no matter how carefully targeted in a city that densely populated, you're going to cause an awful lot of civilian casualties. And it looks as though something like 200 Palestinians have been killed, including 55 children and 33 women so far.
What happens, John? I mean, do we just go through this cycle we saw in 2014, and people are already comparing it to then and saying perhaps this could be worse because of the level of rocket attacks and back and forth? I mean, how is this pattern disrupted? Can it be?
Well, I mean, it will. I don't think it can be interrupted because I think Israel is determined not to let up until it's got something of what it wants. But you know, the real question is, why does it keep arising? And if you're a cynic, I mean, many pro-Palestinian writers and authorities maintain that Israel deliberately started this by the police actions on the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, that it wanted Hamas to start firing rockets because Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, felt that his political position was collapsing and that he wanted to beat his political rivals, and that the best way to do that was through fighting. Now, it's impossible to prove anything like that, but that is what the Palestinian and pro-Palestinian political writers believe.
The United Nations Secretary General saying that this could all descend into an uncontainable crisis, and yet the UN Security Council can't agree on a public statement on this unrest and on this situation. Is the international community doing enough, John, in your view?
Well, I don't think there is a sort of a community really on issues like this. I mean, what you've got is China, I think Norway and Tunisia, all members of the Security Council, pushing for some kind of ceasefire, and the United States saying that this is too early, we can't do it. It isn't the right moment. It'll disrupt diplomatic efforts. I mean, it's slightly difficult argument to understand, and you've got the Europeans and others just sitting back, not really wanting to get too heavily involved.
That's just, I mean, I don't know. When you see a 5-month-old baby being pulled from rubble, how can the international community stand by?
Well, it's done it over 70 years now in different places, in particular in Palestine. So I don't see quite where the movement comes to change its attitudes. And it's not just in Palestine, it's in other parts of the world too. I mean, the United Nations, the international community, if there is such a thing, is totally divided in its politics, naturally enough, and therefore it can't act as one, no matter how many babies and civilians are killed under whatever circumstances.
What did you make of the attack on this high-rise building in Gaza, host to several news organisations, the Israeli Prime Minister saying it was a legitimate target?
Well, he said it was a legitimate target because Hamas was operating from it. I, to be honest, I'm not sure whether that's true or not, although I suspect there may be some truth in that. I, as a journalist myself, not terribly enthusiastic about seeing buildings where journalists are working targeted. It happens again and again around the world. But, to be absolutely honest, I find it hard to get too worked up about journalism and international journalists and so on. I mean, I think this is really a rather different and humanitarian kind of crisis, where the journalists are the onlookers, and if they suffer, well, that's in a way what the journalists are there to do. I mean, I think a much more disturbing thing is that there's one solitary power station now working in Gaza, and it's right down to one turbine. And I think the Palestinian authorities said this morning that they've only got 2 days more fuel to run that. If there's no power, they get a bit of power from Israel, but I think that's been disrupted. But if there's no power that's generated within Gaza, then hospitals and the provision of clean water starts to get seriously affected.
So it's a desperate humanitarian situation. But I'm going back to what you said at the beginning about this pattern, and we're 2/3 of the way through, John. Will you just describe to us how you expect this might play out and on what timeline?
Well, it's difficult to say, but I think, for instance, if the power supply does go, then the situation becomes far more dangerous and disturbing. And I think then the pressure on the United States to step aside from its defense of Israel in the Security Council will come to an end. So we may be talking about the end of this week before there starts to be real pressure on Israel to do a deal of some kind. And then after that, we'll see whether it has a clear effect on the way Gaza goes. And then the pattern will be the same. Gaza will be forgotten about by the international community. Conditions there will be not very much better, but we won't think about it anymore, and we'll think about other things.
John, thank you very much. John Simpson there, BBC World Affairs Editor. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.